This is the Fantasy Focus Books and Authors Podcast, episode 15. Good day and welcome to this episode of the Fantasy Focus Podcast. I'm your host, podcaster, and author of Fun Fantasy Reads, Jimmy Davis. This podcast is exactly what the title says it's going to be, and that's a show focused on everything in fantasy books. From epic fantasy, urban fantasy, swords and sorcery, and everything in between, expect to find the best and brightest authors, books, and everything else associated with the fantasy book world here on the show. Let's start off with a little bit about my update for the week. Things are rapidly approaching for my newest release, Cyber's Change, and I'm working on getting all my ducks in a row because as an indie author, I got to take care of getting the launch and the marketing and everything else together. So there's a lot that has to happen to get the book ready to go, and I'm up to my neck, literally almost, in preparations. Just got stuff stacked all around my desk to kind of get things organized, and I'm looking forward to that. That's coming up on April 5th, which is kind of cool. I'm also working on the second book in that series and finalizing those edits, getting it ready to send to the narrator so Sarah Guise can get started on it. She did a great job on the first book, which if you're an audiobook listener, if you actually want to, I have a few giveaway codes. So if you want to reach out to me, leave a comment on this episode of the podcast. It'll get sent to me and I can go ahead and reach out to you because if you're interested, I can give you a free copy of the audiobook. That's to the first five or so people that check in on that offer. But if you're interested, check in with me. Anyway, if you're interested in more information about what I'm up to, check out my fan group over on Facebook. It's called Jamie's Fun Fantasy Superfans, or on my website and blog at jamiedavisbooks.com. Okay, let's shift gears and talk about my special guest for this episode. I got to chat with Melissa Caruso for this episode, and it was a lot of fun. Melissa is the author of the Swords and Fire trilogy, an adult fantasy series of intrigue and magic. Gets brought to you from Orbit Books. The first book, The Tethered Mage, came out in October 2017 and was shortlisted for a Gemmell Morningstar Award. Book 2, The Defiant Heir, came out in 2018, and the third book is coming in April 2019, so just a few weeks, folks. So the second trilogy set is coming as well in 2020, coming up. Check out my chat with Melissa about her books, her interesting take on magic in her world, and her time as a live-action role-playing gamer, or LARPer, as you might call it. Let's check that out with Melissa right now. Hi, Melissa. Welcome to the Fantasy Focus Podcast. It's really great to have you on the show today.
Hi, it's great to be here.
So why don't you do our readers a favor? And I know probably a lot of them know who you are, but some probably don't. So maybe just tell us a little bit about yourself, maybe a brief bit about your background and yourself as a writer.
Sure. I'm the author of the Swords and Fire series from Orbit Books. It's a fantasy trilogy about a world loosely inspired by late Renaissance Venice, where mages are controlled by the government, and each one is given a falconer who can unleash or seal their power as a way for the government to kind of control the power. And it's about an heiress who is not supposed to be a falconer, but winds up accidentally becoming one in order to control the powers of an out-of-control fire warlock, and about the tempestuous relationship that they wind up having as they attempt to prevent war from breaking out and avert other catastrophes whilst dealing with their rather unwilling partnership.
So I noticed in your bio that you actually went to school for creative writing at Brown. Is that correct?
Yes. I got my undergraduate degree in creative writing from Brown and then went on to get my MFA after that.
So it's funny because I think you're the first person on the podcast that I've talked to that actually went to school for writing. So I'm really, is this something you've always wanted to do?
Oh, yeah. I've really wanted to be a writer since I was tiny, before I could even actually write, I would draw little pictures in, just make books and staple them together before I could even make the words. So that was always my goal. I actually went to school in order to be able to teach writing, which I also really loved, but then found out that it really doesn't pay very well, and wound up going into technical writing instead, which has always been something I regret having had to do. But it's just the academic scene is even more brutal than the publishing scene in some ways. It's a little tricky, at least at the time that I was going to school in creative writing, the programs were very focused on literary fiction, and I always wanted to be a genre writer. So they were not perhaps as directly useful to me as I was hoping, but they did give me a good grounding for teaching if I'm ever able to get back to that someday.
Yeah, I actually still teach from my previous career as a nurse, and I still teach at the local college in their nursing program. And yeah, academia is interesting. I'll just say that.
Yes, it certainly is. It's its own world.
So tell me a little bit about why fantasy appeals to you as a genre.
Well, I've always, always, always loved fantasy best. I think because, for one thing, I just personally find it more exciting. I mean, everything is better with swords and dragons and, and magic. Every time I read some kind of contemporary book, and I think, oh, this is great. The characters are really interesting, but wouldn't it be better with a ghost or with more sword fights, or if something was glowing and levitating? So I think part of it's just that I find fantasy really exciting, but it also really lets you unleash your creativity even more so. I love world building. I love reading other people's world building. I love coming up with magic systems or just playing around with other people's in my mind as a reader. It's just always been most intriguing to me. I feel like all the limits are off in fantasy, and it just really it gives you the biggest box of Legos to play with, both as a writer and a reader.
I feel the same way. Fantasy is probably my first love, followed by sci-fi. But it's one of the things I like about fantasy is it gives you the ability to write about sometimes some difficult topics and address them in ways that aren't as difficult, I guess I would say.
Absolutely. I think that all of the political conflicts, emotional conflicts, all of the things that we struggle with and deal with on a daily basis, when you deal with them in a fantasy setting, you can sort of take them a step removed from reality and embody them in different ways. You can make that conflict something that's a little bit less just grim and mundane and wearisome, and make it something that's a little bit more elevated. And, you can just explore it in new ways and from new angles. And I find that to also be liberating, honestly.
So in your books, you write a story where magic is limited, and it's more scarce, and so it's a commodity. And because of that, the people who can do magic kind of become a commodity too.
Yes. The original idea for the Falcon and Falconer system came from a conversation I actually had in the car on a long trip with my husband, who's a video game designer and also a big geek. And we were talking about what would really happen if you had a world where people were randomly born with magical power, and that magical power was significant. And he said, yeah, there's no way they wouldn't wind up in control. And I was thinking, well, how could a society arise where that wasn't the case? Because he had a really good point. And I came up with the idea for a society where people wound up basically sealing the power of mages at birth and only letting it be used by the government in this somewhat oppressive system. And it was playing around with that idea. I got to thinking about, wow, that would make for some really tense relationships between the people who had to be partnered. And that was where the idea sprang from for the entire series.
Yeah, and it really... I like you said, I can imagine the character relationships really become interesting to explore because of just the tension that's got to exist there between the two people.
Yes, in my one of the big focuses of the series is sort of exploring the relationship arc between Amalia, who is the heiress, who winds up accidentally partnered to this very powerful, very dangerous fire warlock, Zyra. And Zyra also, to make matters worse, or at least a little more difficult, is a pickpocket. So they're just from completely different social classes. They have completely different worldviews. Amalia has been sheltered and actually, you know, had been sort of fed. Most of the society has been fed this sort of fairy tale that it's actually wonderful when mages get sort of impressed into the military because they get all these luxuries and the place where they have to stay is like a palace. And isn't that great? And all these mage children are saved from poverty and so on. But of course, the reality is that they're basically being kidnapped and that it's an oppressive system. And, you know, Amalia has to confront that and then ultimately wind up challenging it. And Zyra, meanwhile, doesn't want to work with her at all. And they wind up at the start. But the things they need to accomplish are actually really important. And, you know, everybody wants to avert war and generally keep horrible things from happening as the plot continues to unfold. So they do wind up finding ways to work together, but it's a long and difficult journey.
And it sounds like it has the opportunity to turn really dark at times. I mean, you're talking about a form of slavery, it seems like, but you know, you have to balance that with keeping the story going and you know, having a positive something happen.
Yeah, it was a really difficult thing to balance in that I had to make sure that it didn't get so dark that I like telling stories that are fundamentally fast-paced, exciting, twisty, and fundamentally fun. And, you know, at the same time, I'm dealing with a subject matter that's inherently potentially dark. And I didn't want to. One choice that I made early on was that the Empire, that the people who are currently in charge of the Falconer system are people who are aware of its flaws to some degree and really want to try to make it better. So it's at a point in the history of this system where the people in charge do care about the welfare of the Falcons, but are still fundamentally the oppressors in this system. And are grappling with that because I feel like that's something that we often run into in modern society where you become aware that you're part of an oppressive system. And then but there are these structures that have been in place for centuries. And how do you deal with that? So I didn't want to if I approached it from perspective of one of the darker periods in the history of this system where people were really being brutal, then like at that point, you can't even. You can't really develop a relationship from there. You can't have a system. You can't really have any kind of friendship or real partnership developed from there. So I had to start from a point where everybody could continually be challenging each other and where the system could be changing and the people could be changing and the relationship could be developing, but where it wouldn't be so dark that at the same time, the story couldn't go in the more adventure-y fun directions that I wanted it to. And it was a tough line to walk.
No, it sounds like it. And you know, you need the right characters to do that. So I wonder, when you put your characters together, do you have people in mind that you want to pull, you know, pieces of their lives and the way they act and put them together into a character? Or do you build a character from scratch, from the ground up? How do you come about kind of reaching that point where you say, this can be a real flesh and blood person in my mind?
Well, I never base characters directly on people that I know. For me, it's more just everything I experience and all the people I know sort of go into the creativity blender. And it's more just sort of a collective amalgamation of my general understanding of human nature. And so there are traits that I pull out where it may be a trait that people I know share, and my understanding of how those traits function is definitely shaped and influenced by the people that I know, but I'm not directly basing it on that. Like, for instance, one of the characters in the series, Amalia's mother, is a very powerful, manipulative, and domineering woman in some ways. But at the same time, she cares a great deal about Amalia. And I feel like that always comes through in their relationship. And some people who know my mother thought that she was based on my mother, but she's really not. Certainly our mother-daughter relationship is nothing like the one in the book. But that sense of how somebody can just have a competence that can fill a room and make everybody assume that they're in control does come from my mother to at least some degree. So things like that, where it's not the character isn't based on somebody, but my sense of how these personality traits work may come from a specific person.
No, it sounds like we pull from the same types of things where, you know, you pull from your experience and feed it into this, amalgamation of a person that you've created. And that's one of the things I enjoy most is that the characters sometimes surprise me, you know, when they do things. Has that happened to you?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, once I get to know characters well enough, they start sort of doing things on their own. And every now and then they'll wind up going in a different direction than my outline originally had them doing, or I'll get to a place where my outline says, okay, now they should do this. And then I get there and I realize that that's not where the character's headspace is. That's not what they're going to do. They're going to try and do something completely different. And, you know, at that point I revise because the character knows best. You have to kind of let them lead and then frantically rebuild the road to be going in the direction that they've wound up pointing. So that's always a fun challenge.
But that's what really makes, I think some of the most lovable characters, you know, for a reader, because they are dynamic and not one dimensional and, you know, just they're on this straight and narrow path where they're the hero and they're just going to go from point A to point B and solve the problem. That's just not how life works.
Right. Exactly. And, you know, I think that also as you write characters, your understanding of them, at least for me, tends to grow and change too. Like I may start out with a simplistic idea of who this character is going to be, but then when I write them, I find new layers and new depths and oh, well, maybe I always thought this was what they wanted, but really underneath that, they really want this other thing, you know, and they don't even know that themselves. And it just winds up with a more complex and real character if you let them grow like that.
Yeah, I kind of meet them as an acquaintance first, and you know where you know some basic things about them and get some general understanding from the way they act outwardly. But I tend to discover more about them. It's like a deepening friendship where you peel away the layers of the onion to get to the core and learn more and more about people the more you know them.
That's a really good way to put it, I think. And I know for me, at least, this was my first time writing trilogy. I recently completed the third book. It's going to be out in April. And I know that the experience of getting to know the characters so deeply over the course of three books was amazing. And by the end, I just knew them so well. And it just, it made the books really a pleasure to write, seeing not only knowing them well enough that they were just flowing so easily to write them, but also having just seen them change over the course of the books, I wound up, it's kind of weird, even though they're my characters, being like, oh, you've grown so much. I'm proud of you, which is almost like they were my kids. So
no, I completely understand that. That makes total sense. And I'm curious now that you've got Unbound Empires coming out in April, I believe. And that's exciting. But when you got to the end, did you feel a little sad? You know, about, you know, this is the end of the story, the end of the road for at least this part of the book?
Yeah, a little bit. I'm definitely going to miss working with the characters. You know, I tell myself, oh, I'll come back to them someday because, I mean, I have no idea whether I actually will or not. That's going to depend on the sort of fortunes of publishing. But I have to tell myself that because I don't really want it to be goodbye forever. I just love writing these characters so much. Although at the same time, it's really fun to be working on something fresh.
I finished a couple of different five book series in particular that I wrote that was, you know, heartbreaking at the end because I wanted to continue with the characters. And I've written a couple of short stories on my own just to kind of revisit some things and kind of have them in the vault here. But just because I enjoy those characters, that's been a way for me to revisit.
Absolutely.
So when you reach out to your readers, I know you're fairly active on Twitter, and I actually saw a post recently that you put up that you were working with your cat sitting in your lap. I think that's like an author thing, that they have their pet right there with them while they're writing.
Yeah, I would love to see some kind of compilation of all the editor cats of Twitter or just the writing world in general who have helped write all of these books. But yes, I have two cats I have three cats total, but two who assist me with every day with my writing, one from my lap and one from right over my shoulder up on the back of my chair.
Yeah, our miniature schnauzer come. I write early in the morning. I get up before everybody else gets up, and I come down and I write, and the miniature schnauzer comes down and sits next to me in the chair. And it's I don't know. I think she's become my muse in some strange way.
That's really sweet.
Yeah, so I think it's the whole pet thing, because I know lots of authors that write with their dog sitting under their desk, or all kinds of different things.
Yeah, my dog is, alas, a little too big for my lap. She's a yellow lab, so she just pines across the room at me from the couch while I'm writing. But she's learned that when I sit in the writing chair, I'm just going to be really boring. So mostly she just takes a nap and grumbles occasionally. And then I take her for a walk later to make it up to her.
Now, I noticed you said something in the information you sent me that you enjoy live action role playing games. And I'm just curious, how that has that lent to your books in any way?
It actually really has. I have found it to be incredibly useful in my growth as a writer. I have been doing live action role playing for over 20 years. I have run a bunch of LARPs, and it's a different storytelling mode, but it really, there are certain things it's been very good at teaching me. Things like one of the biggest ones actually was, so when you're running either a tabletop game or a live action role playing game, one of the big differences is that the person with whom or to whom you're telling the story is right there, and you can see their face while you're telling it. Essentially. So you get reactions right away. So, when you're, there's a certain immediate visceral satisfaction if your heroes think they're at a fancy party and suddenly you kick in the door as the evil fairy queen and yell out, "Fools, you're all doomed," and you get to see their reactions. And that's very satisfying, but it teaches you a lot about how people react to different storytelling elements, since you can see it in real time. And I realized at one point years ago that I was better at storytelling in games back then than I was in writing. And I realized the reason why is that anytime I was running a game, I was thinking about those reactions that my players were going to have when I was going to surprise them or make them cry or make them afraid. And I was always thinking about how my story was going to affect their emotional state. And I wasn't doing that as a writer back then. I was more just writing for myself. And that realization that the readers were like my players really helped me. And now whenever I write, I'm always thinking of the reader, and when I throw in a twist, I'm sort of cackling to myself about, how the readers are going to react to it, instead of just putting it in there for my own amusement. And I feel like that has been huge, among many other things, honestly, in helping me combine the things I've learned from both storytelling methods to become a better storyteller overall.
It's interesting to write with that reader avatar in your mind. I liken it to my podcasting. People always ask me, how do I sit there and podcast by myself? Because some of my shows are just me doing some news and some covering research and things like that. And it can be very dry, but I tell them that I actually envision myself talking to another person. I just, I have this vision of my perfect listener, and they listen to me tell them about what's going on and what's happening. And I think that translated well for me over into writing, because I was able to write for somebody in that sense.
Yeah. I think that's a great analogy for it too. And it sounds like a great technique for podcasting. I think remembering your reader is just, it's so easy when you're writing alone by yourself to kind of wind up looking inward, but remembering the reader and making it into a story you're telling to someone just really helps that story turn out much more intense and accessible and emotional and all of those things, at least for me.
I know you're active on Twitter, and is that the only way you interact with readers, or do you get out at any time to cons or things like that where you get to meet people face to face?
Well, I have not yet had pleasure of being on a panel or anything for cons. I keep forgetting how far in advance you have to plan those things, and we'll go like, oh, this con's next month. Oh, that would have been good to try and sign up for. So I am actually going to WorldCon in Dublin in August. I'm planning on going to ReaderCon, which is pretty local to me this year, but I haven't actually done a lot of cons and stuff yet. That's something I want to do more of in the future. And I've done a couple of bookstore events, but I would love to meet more readers in person because I honestly do better in person, I think. Although I really do love interacting on Twitter. It's a lot of fun. I'm pretty chatty there. But you know, it's that the whole pleasure of seeing people's faces and really getting to know them as people in a way that it's harder to do when it's just little 280 character interactions.
Yeah, and you know, actually, you might try and look and see if there's anything local to you, because I know in my area, the local community college and library get together and do a small event that's a lot of fun to attend, and they have about 1,000 people come on a Saturday. It's like 15 minutes from my house. I just drive down there and get an author table, and it's just great to just chat with people. And they're so excited to learn that there's an author living in their community that they weren't aware of for whatever reason, or some of them have actually read my books, and that's even more exciting. So it's a lot of fun, and you might, and you don't need as much advance notice either. Usually you can get into one of those places. So you should check that out if that's available nearby.
That sounds fantastic. Another thing I have a real passion for is just meeting other writers. And I really love trying to help out people who are earlier in their journeys. You know, I feel like a lot of people gave me a leg up, and I'm eager to pass that along. And part of it is just missing teaching a little bit. So, you know, I may be looking for opportunities to help out in that regard, too, at some point.
Now, I think that's interesting, too, because I think a lot of people think that you know, fantasy authors are in some way in competition with each other. And I haven't yet really found any fantasy authors that feel that way. I mean, we all kind of, you know, are interested in what we're all writing and helping each other out for the most part. That's been my experience, at least. And like you, I was helped out by a lot of people early on to help kind of give me a little springboard for success. And I've tried to give that back. It's one of the reasons I do the podcast. So I think it's important to do that. And it's exciting. It's exciting to hear that you're doing the same thing.
Yeah, I think I've just everybody that I've met so far anyway, among my published author contacts or my on their way to being published author contacts, just been really wonderful people. I feel like the fantasy community has just been very supportive, and there's a lot of really great creative, fun, awesome people out there. And it's just been a real pleasure. I agree that you don't really get that sense of competition. I mean, I know it's, you know, when you step back, it seems like it's true because there's only so many slots for published books and only so much of a market. But I think that, honestly, we have so much more to gain by being friends. I know it sounds really cheesy, but it's true. You know, we're all learning from one another. We're all reading each other's books and loving them. And, you know, there's no reason not to just celebrate each other and lift up other writers.
I completely agree. And I, you know, I always see readers out there clamoring for more books. So clearly they're not getting enough books to keep reading at least the things they want to read. So keeps telling me that there's always room for somebody else to come in and share. You know, I like sharing an author that I've enjoyed reading with my readers in between when my projects come out, because that way at least they know I'm thinking about them.
Absolutely.
So last question for you here. If you weren't writing in fantasy, if you could just, you know, magically start writing in another genre that would just be something completely different, is there something out there that has intrigued you that you would just for fun want to just try?
Well, fantasy is really my true love. There have been times I have tried writing in other genres, but they, like, you know, I've tried writing mysteries. I've tried writing science fiction, but they all wind up kind of pulling back to fantasy. Like, I'll start writing a mystery, and then suddenly there'll be some kind of weird quasi-magical omen going on, or there'll be a ghost or something, and I can't seem to keep it out. So I'm not sure I could. For me, a genre departure would be more like, oh, write in a new subgenre of fantasy. Maybe I'll try just, you know, some contemporary fantasy or paranormal or something. That'd be totally different. So that's probably about as far as I'm likely to wander.
That will wrap up this episode of the Fantasy Focus podcast. Make sure you catch up with us for a whole lot more from the Fantasy Focus community, both here on the podcast, over on Facebook, and over at fantasy-focus.com. Leave a comment on this episode there and let me know what's on your mind. Also, on the website, on each podcast episode, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast, folks. Can't tell you that enough. I'll probably tell you that in every single episode because it's important. You want to make sure you don't miss any of the episodes. So whether you're using an iOS, Android, or any other kind of mobile device, there's a way to subscribe over there. You can even subscribe by email if you want. But check those links on each episode post of the podcast. We have some pretty awesome authors already scheduled in the next few months, including our next episode, which features Todd A. Thompson. It's a great episode. I really enjoyed talking to Todd A., and you'll get to hear that in next week's episode. That's it for this show, though. I want to thank you all for checking out the Fantasy Focus podcast. As always, I'm your host, Jamie Davis, author of Fun Fantasy Reads. Don't forget to follow me over on Facebook at Jamie Davis Books and on my website, jamiedavisbooks.com, where you can get a free book if you sign up for my newsletter, and you can get that over there in the sidebar. Whatever you do, though, subscribe and come back here for the next podcast. In the meantime, don't forget, folks, keep your eyes open, because you know what? There's magic all around you.